Second talk is entitled A Loving Providence. Do you know what a providence is? It's a word we use, I guess, probably not very often, but it covers a great many things. It means a making provision. We ought to be able to remember that one, since it comes from the same root word. Providence, making provision, exercising forethought, preparing, guiding, caring. A simple illustration would be your own providence with your children. You make provision for them, you exercise forethought, you prepare things, you guide them, you care for them. Someone has said the detailed providence of a rational, personal God. That is the thing that I find so staggering. In my old age, I've been reading over some of my journals. I'm now working on volume 30 of the journals that I began when I was 16 years old. And that's not going to help you with how much is in which years were in which book, because I just use blank books and I fill up a blank book and then I go to the next one, but I'm now in my 30th blank book. And I hadn't read back over much of anything, but occasionally I pull one out of the trunk in the attic and I read a little bit, and the thing that stands out to me, in addition to my own stupidity and failures and all of that, which is egregious, but the thing that God reminds me of is his unfailing faithfulness and providence. What a story of the faithfulness of God over against the unfaithfulness of one woman. The detailed providence of a rational, personal God. I see that. When Jim Elliot was praying whether God wanted him to go to Ecuador, he had been corresponding with a missionary who was in the jungle there, and he had made it known to his friends in the assembly, of which he was a member, that he believed that God was calling him to be a missionary, and specifically to be a missionary in Ecuador. Would they please pray for him? And they did. And he was invited to go around speaking occasionally to different assemblies. And they would sometimes press a $10 bill or a $5 bill into his hand just as they were shaking hands goodbye at the door. And each time he was given a gift, he would stuff it into his pocket, and when he got home, he put it into an envelope without really looking at it. When he finally believed that he had to make a move and start moving in the direction of Ecuador, he took that envelope out of his drawer and he went down to the place where you buy tickets for liners. In those days, he was going by boat to Ecuador. And so he went down to book a passage on a freighter, and the man told him the dates on when different freighters would be going, etc., etc. And when they got all through, Jim said, "Okay, how much is the ticket's going to cost?" The man said $315. And Jim pulled out the envelope, and you guessed it. He had $315.60. The detailed providence of a rational, personal God. Can we think of having a contest of wills with that kind of God? Why would we? Well, because we're prideful, we are presumptive, and we are unbelieving. And that's the long and the short of it, isn't it? That's the truth. That's the only reason that we would ever question the wisdom and the providence of God. The eternal God is thy refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. May I see the hands of those of you who might have heard me say that on a program called Gateway to Joy? Oh, I'm delighted to see that there are some listeners to that program. George MacDonald said, "I believe in the providence, but not in the specialty." We're always hearing people talk about special providences. Oh, that was a special providence that last night when we had a flat on the highway in the sleet and the snow, we were within maybe 500 or 1,000 feet of the ticket, of the toll booth, which meant that there were blazing lights. And so when our driver pulled over to the side, if we'd been in the dark, it would have been very dangerous, for one thing, because cars might have hit us. We also might have slid into the ditch, as a number of cars had already done as we drove from Chicago. But this happened, the flat tire happened, as we were approaching the toll booth. And there were big semi-trucks to our left, and so there was room on the right to change the tire with plenty of light. I believe, George MacDonald says, in the providence, but not in the specialty. I do not believe that God lets the thread of my affairs go for 6 days and on the seventh evening takes it up for a moment. The so-called special providences are no exception to the rule. They are common to all men at all moments, but God's care is more evident in some instances of it than in others, to the dim and bewildered vision of humanity. Men seize and call them providences. It would be gloriously better if they could believe that the whole matter is one grand providence. I believe that. The whole matter is one grand providence. God has never let anything slip through his fingers. He has never made a mistake. And I look back through my journals and I realize he has never broken a promise. He certainly has not done things the way I expected. When I have an opportunity to talk with young people who are considering the mission field or people that are planning to go out for perhaps a short term in the summertime, they come to me and ask, "Do you have any advice?" Well, I have. I tell them, number one, don't even think of going to the mission field for even a short term unless you're prepared to be a servant. And how can you know if you are prepared to be a servant? Well, there's a very simple way to find out. Note your reaction when somebody treats you like one. If anybody actually treats you like a servant, most of us rise up in fury. Well, imagine what she said to me, or what she did to me. Or imagine what I did for this church group and nobody ever said thank you. Is that a servant heart? A servant is totally at the disposal of his master. We are totally disposable. These providences, it would be gloriously better if we could believe that the whole matter is one grand providence. And then I say to these prospective missionaries, I believe that the will of God is infinitely bigger than you and I can imagine. The will of God is going to be much harder than you thought. The will of God is going to be very different from what you imagine it's going to be. It certainly was in my case, and in the case of every missionary, every veteran missionary that I've ever talked with. The will of God is very different from what we imagine. But, and I don't leave them in that swamp of despair, it is going to be infinitely more glorious than you can ever imagine. And I'm here to testify that that is the truth. I don't suppose there's anybody here old enough to have listened to Catherine Kuhlman, who was on the radio years ago, and I love to listen to her. And one of the things that she used to interject in almost every talk was, "And how many know that's the truth? Put up a hand." "How many know that's the truth? Put up a hand." And she had a voice much deeper than mine. She was wonderful. And she'd say, what was the other? Oh, there's another one that just slipped my mind. I love to hear her say it. Oh, yes. People would ask her, "Do you believe in a second blessing?" And she would say, "Yes, I believe in a second blessing. I believe in a third and a fourth and a 50th blessing. It's just more of Jesus." What a woman she was, with what discipline. More of Jesus. The whole matter is one grand providence. Yes, 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 I am here to testify. He is loving, he is wise, he fully understands his children. And there are no two of us in this room alike. We don't look alike, we don't think alike, we don't act alike. God fully understands your background, all the hindrances, all the sorrows, all the so-called disasters that happened in your life that made it impossible for you to be the kind of a person that you think you would like to be. He knows all those. He's not taken by surprise. He was not taken by surprise by a flat tire yesterday. Do you believe that? Do you trust him? He says, will you love me? Will you trust me? Will you praise me? Okay, 3 points for you note takers. Number one, his power and his love. The heading is a loving providence. And remember, all of these are under keep a quiet heart. The reason I can keep a quiet heart is because I know that there is a loving providence, absolutely in control of the airlines and everything else. So his power and his love. Think of the miracle that God did for the children of Israel when they got to the Red Sea. And the sea divided itself for Israel. Does water ever do that by itself? I mean, God has ordained that water goes wherever water can go. And if you have a leaking roof, the water is going to come through the roof because that's where the water wants to go. But there are times when God intervenes and changes the course of nature for the sake of his people. And so the water stood up, the Bible says, like walls. Can you imagine that? And the people of Israel went through without even wetting their feet. But what happened when the Egyptians tried to follow them? Nature took its course again because a loving providence had intervened to do something very special and very unexpected for the children of Israel. But he's in charge of the whole thing. He was in charge when the water came back down again, wasn't he? When Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were challenged by the king, and they said, the king said, do you believe that your God whom you serve can deliver you from this fiery furnace? And I love their reply. Yes. We believe that our God whom we serve can deliver us from this fiery furnace. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not bow down to the image nor serve you. No matter what God does, we will trust him. We are going to trust him. So what happens? Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are indeed thrown into the fiery furnace, just as the king had taunted them about. And it was heated so hot that the men who threw them in were singed and burned to death. The fire consumed the king's strongest soldiers, as fire will do. Fire will always eat anything that fire has a chance to eat. But it didn't eat Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's certainly what we would call a special providence, wasn't it? But God didn't call it special. It was his action, which he knew from before the foundation of the world, and he preserved them. And those hungry lions, what is the nature of lions? Well, to eat meat. And so when Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, it certainly was the nature of those lions to go for him. And can you imagine what must have gone through Daniel's head when he was told that he was going to be thrown into the lion's den? He had a lot of time, I would think, at least hours, to ponder, where does a lion start? On your face, maybe? Where does he take the first bite? I mean, if I had been in Daniel's shoes, I'm sure that's what I would have been imagining, all sorts of things. And it certainly is their nature to devour meat. But they, hungry as they were, did not take one single bite out of Daniel. Well, I had here in my notes when I prepared these several weeks ago to tell you about a trip to the airport in January of 1996. I don't need to bother telling you about a trip to the airport in 1997. But God did control what nobody else could control in that particular case. We couldn't have possibly gotten to the airport with the blizzard, kind of blizzard we had, but we got there. And when we got there, I fully expected that our flight to Miami would be canceled, and it was the only flight on the whole screen that was not canceled. And so the Lord is one who is concerned about the tiniest and the biggest things in our lives. And He is the same Lord who spoke, and the wind and the waves were calm. He can speak a word, and He speaks peace to our soul when we simmer down and conform our wills to Him. My brother Phil experienced peace, joy, fun when he finally drank his milk. Such a ridiculously small thing, isn't it? And yet, if we don't see God in those things, how are we ever going to see Him in what to us are the big things? Secondly, His tenderness. First thing was His power and His love. Second is His tenderness. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. I heard about a little girl who was taught to say that. The Lord is my shepherd. And so she said the words, taking hold of four fingers and then clasping her thumb with the word shepherd. And that little girl became very ill, and she died. And when they found her, she was holding her hand, her thumb. She'd been saying those words, the Lord is my shepherd, and He leadeth me in paths of righteousness. For whose name's sake? Elizabeth Elliot's? No. For His name's sake. He leads us in green pastures beside still waters, and He also leads us where? Through the dark valley. But the psalmist says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Does he fear no evil because there isn't any? No. There's a lot of evil. The world is full of evil. But he says, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. That's all that matters. It simplifies your life. It will give you a quiet heart. The Lord is with you. He is not going to allow anything at all to take place without His control. Every night when we children went to bed, we were sung with by one or the other of our parents, Jesus, tender shepherd, hear me. Bless thy little lamb tonight. Through the darkness be thou near me. Keep me safe till morning light. Very reassuring, comforting words that had a quieting effect on all of us. What we consider marvelous coincidences meet and unite and bring about the good of God's chosen people. In January of 1996, in that trip that I just mentioned, we were going to Ecuador for the second time. We had gone in 1994, and my husband and I decided that we would like to go and take Valerie, my daughter, and her husband, and her oldest grandson, our oldest grandson. Well, we had to make a trip from Quito down into the jungle in order to visit the Quechua Indians and then the Aucas, and I didn't know how we were going to get there, but who should happen to be at the guest house where we were staying but Nate Saint's son, Steve. And he just happened to be going to the jungle the next day, which was the day we were hoping to go, and he just happened to say that he'd be glad to take us. And so we got to Tena, which used to be a very tiny little crossroads when I was a missionary, and this was where I was hoping that we would be able to find my dear friend Venancio, the faithful Quechua Indian who had taken over on the station when Jim died. And Venancio has always followed the Lord very faithfully. He's learned the Alca language. Now he's a missionary not only to the Quechuas but to the Alcas as well. And I had been corresponding with him, telling him about our arrival and hoping that he would be able to round up a few of the people that I was most longing to see. So when we got to Tena, my heart sank to discover that Tena is now a metropolis. And I didn't have any idea how we were going to find Venancio. Back in my day, you could have asked anybody on the street, where does Venancio live, and they would have known. But everything just seemed to cave in on me immediately before I'd even gotten out of the car. I just thought, we're never going to be able to find this man. What are we going to do? I got out of the car, since I was the only one other than Steve who spoke Spanish, and I was the only one who spoke Quechua, so I got out of the car, and instantly a young man came up to me and he said, Buenos dias, señora. Which, of course, you understand in Spanish. Good morning, señora. And I said, Buenos dias, runashimirari makchangi, which means, are you a speaker of Quechua? And he said, yes. And he was almost dropped his teeth right there, you know, to see this old foreign woman speaking his language. And I said, do you know where Venancio lives? And he says, yes, I can take you there. The tenderness of a shepherd who leads us in paths of righteousness for his namesake. The great why that comes up in our minds. Why does God allow this? Why doesn't God do that? Psalm 85, verses 7 and 8. Show us your unfailing love, O Lord, and grant us your salvation. I will listen to what God the Lord will say. He promises peace to his people, his saints. I will listen. And lastly, is he trustworthy? Can you bring yourself to believe that God is trustworthy? Proverbs 16:4 says, the Lord works out everything for his own ends. The Lord works out everything for his own ends. It is a loving providence. He is love. God so loved the world. But we say to ourselves, well, I trust him most of the time, but how can I call things which hurt or disappoint me blessings? From a loving God? Yes, we need to revise our understanding of the word love. You mothers, when you have spanked your little child, did you ever say what my mother would say to us? This hurts me worse than it hurts you. And did you ever believe that when you were a little child? Of course not. I didn't believe a word of it. I believe it now. You spank the child because you love the child. And my dear friend Barb Tompkins of Tucson, Arizona, told me that she raised her children on the principle that happiness is a choice. And if you choose to disobey, you are choosing a spanking. And so when little Katie disobeyed, Barb called her to come over, took her onto her lap, and said, Katie, I see that you have chosen a spanking. Whereupon she administered the spanking, and then she tells Katie how much she loves her. And of course, Katie doesn't believe a word of that either. But the time comes when she knows it's true. And we are equally faithless with God. Is he trustworthy? Does he really know what he's doing? Do these things come from a loving God? Hebrews 10:35. Do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You have need to persevere, so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. Teach your child perseverance. Do not throw away your confidence. I can remember being at my daughter's house when she was trying to teach her 8-year-old daughter, Christiana, arithmetic. And Christiana was just wailing at the kitchen table where they have homeschooling. And she said, oh, Mama, I can't do this, and I'm never going to be able to do this. She had thrown away her confidence, which is exactly what I did when it came to arithmetic. Teach perseverance. In sixth grade, we had a penmanship teacher who made us write little jingles by way of practice in penmanship. And one of them was, if a task is once begun, never leave it till it's done. Be the labor great or small, do it well or not at all. Now, you ought to be able to remember that just hearing it once. If a task is once begun, never leave it till it's done. Be the labor great or small, do it well or not at all. Will you say to the Lord, I am willing to receive what you send, to lack what you withhold, to relinquish what you take, to suffer what you inflict, and to do what you command, and to be what you require. Now, I know some of you wish that I had said that slowly enough so you could write it all down. Some of you already know it. It's not original with me, but I will give it to you again in a form which is quick. Just put I am willing at the top, then put receive, and then space send. I'm willing to receive what you send. Under receive, put lack, and under send, put withhold. I'm willing to relax what, to lack what you withhold. Under lack, put relinquish. Under withhold, put take. Under relinquish, put suffer. And under take, put inflict. And then to do what you command and to be what you require. Loving providence, his power and love, his tenderness, his trustworthiness. You will keep a quiet heart if you trust him. God bless you.